Joining me on the line from Cape Town is Rabbi Greg Alexander of the Cape Town Progressive Jewish Congregation. And Rabbi Alexander is known for his work in interfaith spaces. And he believes not only is this possible, but it's essential. Rabbi, thanks so much for joining us. After everything that happened on October the 7th, is it even realistic to talk about Jewish-Muslim unity? Or does that just feel too far off for most people right now?
Hi, Paula. Thanks so much for inviting me onto the show. And I guess we could probably start with, is it possible to have Jewish-Jewish unity before we even
Excellent
talk
question.
About... I am a person that is by nature eternally optimistic, and I like to see what is possible, even in moments of crisis. I feel like there, maybe even all the more so in moments of crisis, I feel like there are always opportunities for us to improve where we are at. So I was sitting in shul last Saturday. After Shabbos, we had a panel of congregants speaking. All of them were deliberately chosen because they have different views on exactly this topic. And while we had views from the extreme left to the middle to the extreme right expressed, and while the temperature in the room did raise, what I was impressed with was the fact that people, at least in that particular forum, people were willing to listen to each other, even though their views were dramatically different. Nobody stormed out and nobody killed anybody else, thank God. We managed to sit down and eat food together. So yes, there are moments of hope within the Jewish community. And I would say there are also moments of hope that we can look at between Israelis and Arabs, Jews and Arabs, Israelis and Palestinians, where things still, for me, plant kernels or seeds that can grow. The question is, will they be allowed to? So should I say some of the things that give me hope?
Yes, please.
Sure. So, Paula, I think a lot of it is, it depends who you listen to. And nowadays, you know, we can find ourselves listening to the same voices again and again, and those might shape the way we look. So if you're listening to Daniela Weiss, if you're listening to Smotrich, if you're listening to Ben-Gavir, then that will shape your worldview in terms of the way that you will perceive hopes for peace. I certainly feel it's important to hear those voices. I also feel like we need to listen to people in Israel on the ground who are trying to see ways past this. And up until recently, most of the voices that were critical of the government were critical of Netanyahu and his right-wing government and their approach to the war, because they had not prioritized the bringing home of hostages. And I completely agree with that critique. But we didn't hear as much, or let's say there wasn't a great volume of calls for initiatives for peace. And I can totally understand why. After October the 7th, I can totally understand why Israelis, even on the left, are not immediately calling for peace. But the critique was really focused on the hostages. What we've seen in the last days is the NGO sector and those on the left of center in Israel starting to critique the government's handling of Gaza and of the aid crisis there. And we're starting to see more voices that are rising up that are critical of this government.
Rabbi,
why is that important? Yeah, sure.
If you don't mind, if I can come in. What I hear you saying is that there's a need for us to get out of our echo chambers and actually hear
Absolutely.
Different voices. What would you say to someone in our community who feels that reaching out to Muslims now is a betrayal of our own pain?
I would say that I understand that view, and I don't in any way think that there is not a valid path to feel that pain and to feel that mistrust. Yes, I would say that is there. Fortunately, there are people in Israel on the ground who have established relationships with people going back decades that do have a sense that there is a potential for partnership. And when you look at organizations like Umdim Bayachad, Standing Together, and the Parents Circle Families Forum, where you've had activists that have worked side by side for decades to try and create some sense of dialogue, I try and look at what are Israelis saying, as well as what are people are saying in Cape Town or Johannesburg, to get myself out a little bit more than who is just around me. So when I see Israelis talking about the hope of peace, that tells me, okay, there are people that want to see a dialogue happening, and that gives me hope.
Have you ever personally struggled to hold space for both grief and dialogue? And if yes, how have you managed it?
Yeah, it's a great question, Paul. I'd say that since October the 7th, a lot of the time that I'd spend with congregants is trying to unpack their feelings about this, the trauma that they've experienced. Even obviously, there are people who have family there, there are people who have been directly impacted, there are people who have been in Israel or lived in Israel or are expat Israelis in the congregation. But I'd say that all of us have experienced trauma, whatever our connection, and we all feel that pain, and that's valid. 251 hostages, 1,139 Israelis killed. That's not something you just get over. And at the same time, we've seen the trauma of tens of thousands of people getting killed in Gaza, and we're seeing Israeli soldiers more than one a day being killed fighting the war that this government insists is the only solution. So the pain is real. It's not just subjective. The pain is real and the trauma is real. And I can't say to somebody, oh, come on, get over this and let's work for peace. That would be a totally... I would not be authentic if I took that position, because I've felt the same pain and the same trauma. I can't deny that that is a valid path. But I would say, why then would I still advocate for peace? For the very reason that I don't want to see that pain continue. And I don't see that this path is going to lead to an end to that pain. It's not going to lead to stability in the Middle East. It's not going to lead to addressing historical grievances. It's not going to reduce the potential for future conflicts. It's not a solution. All it is a management of a situation that will continue the pain.
Rabbi, some people argue that we need justice before we can talk peace. Do you think it's possible to pursue both justice and peace at the same time?
Yeah, I think, again, beautiful and well-phrased, and I think that is absolutely essential. So when I said searching for peace includes addressing historical grievances, I would say that justice is necessary, but we need to listen to the calls for justice that come from all sides. So it's not just justice for me. If we want to see stability in the Middle East, we need to see justice for everybody. So realpolitik is about finding the balance between how can we listen to the pain and the trauma, but also how can we create facts on the ground that allow people to go forward and live their lives. So if we say we can't have peace until we have justice, then it's very possible that we will never have an end to the pain and the war because we're waiting for justice. Can we say, I want peace without justice? No, because that also will not set the platform for mutual understanding or mutual respect, and that's just going to lead to future conflict. So if we don't settle both of those, we can't have either of them.